Monsieur, bonsoir. Et votre question, si vous avez vu, ça s'adresse à Monsieur Dauphin.
My question is for Monsieur Dauphin, yes.
Je vous écoute, monsieur.
I'm here tonight to address Monsieur Dauphin's involvement in the signing of the contract in 2004 with Verint, who is providing the security cameras and the installation in our metro. A few months ago, there was a group of my colleagues who came to this chamber to ask Mr. Dauphin about this subject, which he feigned ignorance about, saying he had no idea what we were talking about, what contract we were talking about, what company we're talking about, even though we have him in press releases describing the wonders that Verint security systems will bring to Montreal. So I'm not here tonight to ask Mr. Dauphin why he has given this company, which has extensive ties to CIA, Mossad, and MI6, this contract to our city, because it is quite apparent he does not want to answer that question. I'm only here tonight to express my concern as a citizen and as someone who takes the metro every day, to inform all of you that there are many of us in this city who know the truth about what happened on September 11th, what happened in London on 7/7, and that you had better make sure that nothing happens to our city, because if an attack happens in the metro and you try and blame it on Al-Qaeda or Iran or whatever you they're going to try and blame it on, we will not believe you. And that is the only reason I came here tonight. Thank you very much for your time.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Bonsoir, Monsieur Labrier. We had the occasion, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, to answer some question like the one we're having tonight. My colleague, Claude Trudel, the president of the MTC, Montreal Transit Corporation, had the opportunity to answer these questions.
Yeah,
what I remember about this question is that we had been in public tender in 2004, and it's a company that won the public tender. So I'm not aware personally, Mr. Speaker, exactly which company got it, which other company didn't get it, but I know that all the rules were follows, and we had been in public tenders, and there was a selection committee with a jury, and it's the best company in my knowledge that got the contract, but otherwise I have no memory about exactly what happened, if it wasn't a good company or the best company. I know that we had been in public tender, and the company...
Thank you, Mr. Dauphin. Thank you, Mr. Dauphin. Do you have another short question?
No, I would just like to clarify that I am not accusing anyone here of complicity in any sort of conspiracy or what have you. I simply want to make known that there are thousands of citizens in Montreal that if there's an attack, that we will not believe the stories that you give us. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO. You are listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. That was a clip that I took off of YouTube. It was from the Montreal City Hall meeting. And I thought that'd be so appropriate. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. To date is the 28th of July 2008, and what we're going to do today is we're going to allow Dan Thompson to come in and then sing our theme song. So go ahead, Dan.
Good evening, everybody, or good day, I should say. My name is the Eve of Destruction. Maybe that's more right. But everybody, keep the stiff upper lip out there, and remember, resistance is the path to liberation. So here's a little song for you.
Up, two, three, four. Up, two, three, four. Pack your bags, it's off to war. Won't be hanging around here no more. Time to back a capitalist whore. Pay the price of being poor. Pack your bags, it's off to fight for the corporate fascist right. Get your look at liberty from the working end of an RPG. Lift, 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 lift. Don't you worry about the kill and make the ultimate sacrifice. They bought everything we're selling, lock and load, and don't think twice. Pack your bags, it's off to war. Too much money to ignore. Unlimited growth must always have more. What do you think you're fighting for? Pack your bags, it's time to see what the new world order will be. Get a look at liberty. military might to put up a valiant fight with no future end in sight. Pack your bags, it's time to see what the new world order will be. See our manifest destiny, investing in a killing spree. Yeah, pack your bags, it's off to war. Won't be hanging around here no more. Time to back a capitalist whore. Find out what you're fighting for. Pack your bags, it's time to see what the new world order will be. See our manifest destiny, investing in a killing spree. Pack your bags, it's time to war. Time to pack a capitalist whore. Won't be hanging around here no more. Pack your bags, it's off to war.
Thank you, Dan, for singing that song. And before we introduce our first guest, what happened was I was searching through MySpace a few days ago, and I came across a very interesting piece that I thought I'd share with everyone. Apparently, President Bush and his attorney general have basically come up with a plan to make the entire globe, including the United States of America, a battlefield where the president decides who will be locked up forever. Continuing on, now this is quoted off of the ACLU website. I'll be putting a link on my own website later on this week. And my website is www.angus-mcleod.com. And McLeod is spelled N-C-L-E-O-D. And continuing on, just the next sentence, the legislation that this Attorney General is pushing would also subvert the Constitution, authorize indefinite detention, and permanently conceal the Bush administration's systematic torture and abuse of detainees. Now, with that said, I'd like to introduce our first guest, Sandra Findlay, who is a Canadian political activist, former leader of the Saskatchewan Provincial Green Party, and has bravely put her own freedom and rights on the line, all in an effort to educate and protect other Canadians. For as Sandra and others around her have pointed out, the gigantic U.S. war machine has been able to reach across international border between Canada and the U.S. and under the excuse of NAFTA and the corporate design of the, disguise of the U.S.-owned Lockheed Martin, it had played a major role in designing the software that processed the information that was gathered in the last Canadian federal census in 2006. This in itself has entered into the possibility that private information from all Canadians who filled out their census could possibly be in the hands of the U.S. war machine right now, which could have been done by a hidden backdoor access through this program only the designer of this program may know of. Hello, Sandra? Well, we're having a little bit of technical problems, so we'll get to Sandra in a couple of minutes.
But that's perfectly right, what they're doing. That's right on the nail there, because the whole thing is all about money. War is nothing but money. People think it's about issues. It's about governments. It is about money and money only. The American military complex is so deep, and the Wall Street and the banks are so deep, that their whole thing, and they tell everybody straight in their face every day, all this business is built on unlimited growth. And if you're in the war business, then war must grow. If you're making bullets, you must have somebody for somebody that needs to be shot, somebody that they want to shoot. It's very, very simple. There's nothing complicated about greed, money, and war.
Well, thank you, Dan. And we have Sandra on the phone. Hello, Sandra?
I'm just catching in now, so I don't know what has gone before. I couldn't hear you.
Well, we had a little bit of technical problems there, Sandra, but it's all fixed now. And thank you so much for coming on.
Sure.
And the first question I have to ask you, how did Lockheed Martin become involved with the Canadian census, and what is the importance of this U.S. corporation?
Well, let me start with the importance of the U.S. corporation, Lockheed Martin. They are the world's largest weapons manufacturer. I'm sorry if you've already covered that, but that's what they do. They sell weapons to lots of different countries around the world, and they have a large presence now in Canada. I didn't know that before. One of the things that they manufacture cluster bombs, and I didn't know a whole lot about cluster bombs either until I started doing some research in preparation for my trial. And cluster bombs are like landmines. When you drop out a big container canister that has a bunch of little bomblets, but they're deadly bomblets inside it. It explodes. They splatter over the countryside. Some of them don't explode on impact, and so you're left with a lot of undetonated munitions on the ground. Aside from the people and destruction that happens when they are launched. So what you have is obviously indiscriminate killing. It's killing of civilians. So that's Lockheed Martin, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they're huge, the world's number one. They are into weaponry that contravenes international humanitarian law. And now your next question, how is it that they got involved with the Canadian census in 2006? If you ask Statistics Canada, the government, they will tell you, oh, well, we tendered the contracts, and through NAFTA, we are required to honor the best bid. And Lockheed Martin simply got the contract through having an outstanding bid to do work on the Canadian census.
And also, there has been more than one Canadian who has not filled out the census, including yourself. What kind of threats and actions have been held against each of you by the federal Canadian government for standing and defending your democratic right of not wishing to be part of the census?
The Statistics Act makes it illegal for people not to comply with the census. And the punishment is 3 months in jail and or a fine of $500. That's the maximum that you can receive. So basically, in order to get compliance, what the government uses is that law to prosecute you. So you're going to go to jail, you're going to get a $500 fine if you don't do what we're, you know, if you don't fill out your census form. And what happens is that you get a lot of phone calls, trying to get you to fill it out. You get a lot of rationalizations that say, oh, but, you know, Lockheed Martin could never actually access the data that's being collected. So you get rationalizations that do not address the moral issues. The moral issue is, you know, do we want our money? Do we want to fund these corporations that are so corrupt? But that issue never comes up. It's just, you know, you must do this, and if you don't do it, then we will get tough with you. And so the consequence is that Todd Stelmach from Kingston, Ontario, he's going to be in court on August the 6th, and he'll find out his trial date at that time. And I've already had my trial date assigned. My trial is January 7th and 8th, coming up in January.
So you mean that the federal government's going to waste taxpayer money to go after citizens of Canada just because these citizens are holding up their democratic right to say they don't want to be part of any war machine that's carrying out illegal wars throughout the whole world?
Well, yes. And, you know, they view it as enforcing the law. I view it as the way you view it, that, well, no, the law was never... Laws are not meant to be strictly applied, and they have requirements of the government. The government has a requirement too, and I, the citizen, have a responsibility as well for governance, for what's going on in government. I have a responsibility. It's my government, so I'm going to exercise those things, and that's the way I view it.
And on February 14th, 2008, Harper and Bush signed the Troop Exchange Agreement. How does this agreement affect Canadian sovereignty? And continuing, the next question is, also with 2010 Olympics coming up here in Vancouver, How is the agreement going to be affecting BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and the rest of Canada?
Well, that's a lot. Now, let me see. Well, first of all, the troop exchange agreement is to me a very threatening document. What it does is to take away the sovereignty of the Canadian people. The official name for that document is the Civil Assistance Plan, so that in the event of civil emergency, the government of Canada can call in the American troops. And in the situation of the Olympics, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't thought about it in that context. I've thought about it in the context of people becoming increasingly aggressive about the rights to water, and the Americans being in the American Southwest is in dire need of water, and there are corporations that want to make lots of money from water. There are people that want to sell Canadian water to make money. So if you have a population that is informed and increasingly standing up for their rights, then it's pretty easy to create civil unrest, civil emergency. And now this is digressing from what you were talking about, but if you look at, for example, the Montebello meeting in August of last year, where you had the Security and Prosperity Partnership being negotiated, and there were police plants from the Quebec police in the crowd to turn that crowd violent. They had rocks, they had hoods, they deliberately tried to make the crowd go violent. So that's is that the creation of civil emergency? And so, we have to call in the American troops. Well, those are some of the scenarios where I see that document being very, very worrisome. And then following on the heels of that, what you have in June of this year, 17th of June, the Canadian military posting their new, what is called Canada First Defense Strategy. And that's also another worrisome document. So what we have is a series of related events. And with the Canada First Defense Strategy, it's very much about enriching corporations through government war contracts, and that is not what Canada is about. We are not, we are not about making war because we can make money from making war. And I just caught the tail end of your speaker who was just speaking, so I think you must have already addressed that or have talked about that.
Yeah, that's Dan Thompson. He comes in, he sings our theme song. And what happens is, Dan, do you want to ask Sandra a quick question?
What I wanted to say is that the issue there about the American government and the Canadian government passing about who's authority. There's a book by Peter Versailles, and he was an FLQ member in the 60s. And if you ever read this book, it's called White Niggers of America, and it's about the enslavement of the working class. And if anybody get their hands on this book, I actually got this book from taking it off the library shelves, and all dissenting books, anything that's got to do with any ideology, any theory. If you read the history of Canada, you'll find out the day that they sign Confederation in Canada, Canada ceased to be a Canadian entity. We are 100%... right up the yin-yang, American-controlled. This country is a country in name only, and it's all 100% by the corporation. Everybody must remember what was on the desk of Roosevelt, said at the desk, is the business of America is business, not human rights, not dignity, not prosperity, not self-sufficient. It is business. Anything stands in that way is a dead duck.
Yeah, it's almost like Canada right now is being treated as basically the territory of the United States, like Puerto Rico and Guam. And it's like we're looked upon as leaf in space, expanding living space, right? And our natural resources are what they want. They don't want the people. And if you take a look at it, there's a song out done in the 60s. It's called One Tin Soldier.
Mm.
And it talks about people living on the hilltop, and they're willing to share with the people in the valley. Now, ordinary Americans, I think of them as my brother and sister, because I lived down in the United States for almost 5 years. And you know what? I will protect the ordinary Americans. I'll protect the ordinary Canadians. But there are the few elitists from Canada and the United States that they don't care about the people. They just want the natural resources. They want to have their little kingdom. It's what they want. And you're looking at it and you're just thinking to yourself, it's like history repeating itself again and again and again. Exactly. And yet what happens is people are not willing to basically take the time. And with that said, you're talking about the defense strategy that the Canadian government just put out. You know, how does that affect ordinary people, the people that are driving around the SUVs, the people that are drinking at Starbucks? You know, how does that affect them? Maybe by telling them, it can start to wake them up and they'll want to stand up more and more.
That's a good question, Reg. And actually, I think that information is the deficit, and the thing that's required to get people motivated is the information. They need to see that this is what's actually happening, because most people are oblivious. And when I say most, like, the other thing is, it doesn't take everybody. We can change. We can take back. We can take back our country from transnational corporate interests. We can reclaim it. And it doesn't have to be everybody. What you have to be is more articulate, and you have to be good at getting that message out. And your radio program is great for doing that. And the other critical thing, I believe, is empowerment. And again, information is part of empowerment, because I can't stand up and speak and challenge if I don't have confidence. And to give me confidence, I need to solidly know the information. And so when you work on things and email is a tremendous tool. You can get information out to lots of people, and more. It's ordinary people. It's not just activists. What I can say is that activists are becoming ordinary. I think it'll become, you know, uncool not to be an activist, whereas it used to be that you didn't want to say, well, I'm an activist. Well, lots of people say that today. I am an activist, and that's a badge of honor. And it's a badge of respect, because what you're doing is the work for not only, you know, people who are oblivious, but you're doing it for future generations, because this planet is not going to be inhabitable by human beings if we don't get an end to the corporate agendas, or the agendas of the people who are after, as you say, money, power, and greed.
And also, how has Lockheed Martin and the federal Canadian government been able to get into bed with some Canadian universities, and what kind of project are these learning institutions working on, which may in the future be used to bring harm to another human being?
The way they get into the universities, Lockheed Martin being the example, but you can use other transnational corporations, and the mechanics of the process are the same. The federal government has what it requires is that when corporations from outside Canada are awarded contracts, they must turn around and invest in Canada. So those are what are called offset agreements. So Lockheed Martin, and first of all, it is known. I mean, there's groups in the United States that work on what are called government oversight. And what they expose is the exorbitant profits that Lockheed Martin makes through its contracts with the American government. It's no different from their contracts with the Canadian government. So they get a contract worth, for example, one in January was worth $1.4 billion. So then there's an offset agreement in that says, okay, you have to invest in Canada. Well, the only way that Lockheed is going to invest in Canada is if they are making exorbitant profits. And so, where are they going to put this money that they're required to put into Canada? Well, they'll go to the universities. Well, isn't that nice and convenient? Because then what you have is this you know, they get the aura of being this wonderful, munificent corporation that's, you know, helping to fund this university that's in desperate need of money. They are the, you know, the charger on the white stallion, the charger on the white stallion coming to the rescue of the university with money, $2 million in the case of the May agreement with Dalhousie. So then your next question is, okay, so what they get is it's really our money that they're putting into the university, because they got the exorbitant contract with the government, which is our money, of course, and so then they take our money and they give it to Dalhousie. So they get all the credit for giving the money to Dalhousie. Now, if the government gave it directly to Dalhousie, there would be a lot more than $2 million to give to the universities. But after Lockheed takes its big cut, there's only $2 million left. So they give that to the university, and they create this aura of this nice, benign corporation. Most Canadians don't know who Lockheed Martin is. It's only if you sit down and look that you find out, what they are is this, you know, this monstrosity in the world. So they're going to help fund research. Okay, well, is the research going to be in the public interest? Well, no, it's going to be research that is going to, in the end, benefit Lockheed Martin. And in fact, one of the terms of the offset agreement, or the term of the contract that Lockheed has with Dalhousie University is that they have a proprietary interest in research that will be beneficial to them. So, there's lots in it for Lockheed.
You were just this next point is actually you're touching on a bit of it, right? And with the U.S. now facing over $4 trillion of debt since the Bush regime has taken office, that's just in the period of time that they were running their little, you know, neocon legal wars all over the world. And the number only continuing to go through the roof as the U.S. now the Canadian economy appears to be gearing towards being based on more profits. If our government continues on this pathway, how many programs like universal health care, protection of union rights, fair wages, and other social/economical programs in Canada could be in danger of being axed just so that the funding to the illegal wars could be allowed to continue?
Yeah, well, I think that you can look at the United States. They don't have universal health care. They don't have, and everybody knows that very well. Well, it's of course they don't. If you're putting all your money into your war machine, there's no way that you're going to, you know, go even further into debt and be able to finance those things. There's a percentage of your gross domestic product that you can be spending on servicing debt, and when you get beyond that, you start paying penalties too in much higher interest rates. I don't know if you're as old as I am. If you are, you'll know how Canada went through a period of very high debt ratios. And yes, you know, our credit rating on the international scene went down, and what happens, the history is there, and it's also a no-brainer. People can figure it out. If you're spending all this money on debt and on war, you've got to be, then your social programs get cut. Of course they do. You don't have money to fund the universities. You don't, all of those things are put at huge risk as you start taking the money of the economy and diverting it into war. And you may have seen yesterday's news, CBC, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, the guy from Vancouver, David Emerson, he's announced that we're going to have a possible 10% increase now in Afghanistan in the troop deployment and whatnot. Well, that's, yeah, so what, you know, so it never stops. You just keep escalating and escalating and escalating. Prior to that, Peter MacKay had denounced that we were spending $490 billion. And you know, so and now Emerson, and but they know that they're on thin ice because the announcement comes out as maybe we're going to do that. We could do that. You know, this is after Emerson has been in Afghanistan. Well, if citizens exercise their responsibility and get on Emerson's case and say no, no, you're not going to have that money. You're not going to have that money to do war. They're in a minority position, so you know they won't. They know they'll go through the ice, but people have to let them know. People have to say to them no. And so, you know, that's what I encourage people to do. It's easy to, in today's world. You can easily get David Emerson, the Foreign Affairs Minister. You can easily get Peter MacKay, the Minister of National Defense. It's easy to get their contact information. And do it. Tell them no.
And the final question I have for you, you know, with the political system now being the conservatives, the liberals, the NDP, and small parties not really having that big a say anymore in for the Canadian people, I mean, how can ordinary people bring about change so we can throw off this political party system and allow direct democracy where the people decide through, you know, referendums or other ways, to basically major decisions that's going to run Canada?
As I view it, Reg, it's parallel to what's happening with other institutions. So if you look at the churches, they abuse their power, the major churches. What's happened is they're losing status, big time power and influence. It's all going down the drain. Exactly the same thing is happening with government in Canada. They've abused their power seriously. It doesn't matter which of the political parties. Much of what is now in place was the blocks set in place by the Liberals or by the Mulroney government prior to the Liberals. It doesn't matter. So the system of governance that we have is failing us. It's not delivering the goods. People know that, and they know, you know, some of the reasons. And so I was for a year and a half the leader of the Green Party of Saskatchewan, so I have some experience in the political sphere, and my view is that what you are describing is that it has to be citizens taking back our power, and basically there are ways that you can do that, and I look at, for example, the boycott of the census, which was that contracting out to Lockheed Martin, as a way that I, as a citizen, can help to draw attention and to put pressure on the government. I'm not going to. You don't cooperate with the government, and that is the lesson of Gandhi. You don't cooperate with that which is wrong. And I would point out to people as well that right now, the tendering for the 2011 census is being done. So now is the time also to tell Statistics Canada and the minister responsible, the Minister of Industry, and the Minister of Public Works, who is responsible for negotiating the contracts, you tell them right now, if Lockheed Martin has any part of the 2011 census, then I won't be complying with it. For the 2006 census, there weren't as many people that knew even that Lockheed Martin had a part of that census. Now, you know, this is, you know, 2 years later, there's way more people know who Lockheed Martin is and that they had that have played a role. So many, many people who I've talked to have said, had I known that Lockheed Martin was involved in the 2006 census, I would never have filled it out and sent it in. Well, so now they are in a position to say to the government, you know, like this is 3 years in advance of the next census, don't do it. Don't do it, because if you do it, there's going to be repercussions. So it's and right now too, Lockheed Martin is trying to get the and looks like they may be getting part of the census work for the a census in the United Kingdom. Well, there's people building resistance there, and we're working with them, sharing information, so that they can boot those, you know, boot those people who are, that's, you know, it's not that the people who are down at the bottom of Lockheed Martin are evil. They're just, you know, they got a job. They need to feed their families. But the people who are running those corporations, that's evil. It's evil when you're dropping cluster bombs on civilian populations, you know, other people. How would you like it? You know, if somebody was dropping cluster bombs on Canadians, I'll tell you, we'd have lots of terrorists in Canada.
And also, just in 30 seconds' time, could you quickly share some contact information with our listening audience, just in case anyone listening wants to ask you a few questions that we haven't covered today?
Sure. First of all, I'm from Saskatoon. My phone number is 306-373-8078. My email address is, first of all, the end of it is at Sask, which is the first four letters out of Saskatchewan, okay? Sask and then TEL, T-E-L. So Sask Telecommunications or Sask Telephone. So the end of it is at sasktel.net. The first part of it is SABEST1. So it's the first two letters out of Saskatchewan, S-A, and then BEST, B-E-S-T, and then the numeral 1. SABEST1@sasktel.net.
Well, thank you for coming on today on Monday Brown Bagger, Sandra. That was Sandra Finley. And you have a beautiful day. And we're going to take a brief break and play a track which comes out of the University, Kansas State University. It's a Dr. Leslie Hannon who's speaking. And right after we come back, we're going to talk about that piece, which I pulled off of YouTube. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to Monday Brown Bagger. The date is the 28th of July,
2008. Hey, let me show you a couple of other things here that I have. And the priest did something that... we found interesting. I say that because there's things that we discussed here in class, and it's very timely. And we were talking about it just right before class started. Here's one. Think about it. Think about this. Would it be popular to make people of Jewish descent carry around that? Then why does the United States government make Indian people carry around this? This man right here, Andrew Jackson, is to the American Indian what Adolf Hitler is to the Jewish person. As a matter of fact, and this is very well documented, you can find this, and this may fit quite nicely into some people's presentations. You can find, don't force it. If it don't fit, don't force it. But if it does fit, it's very well documented that Adolf Hitler studied what Andrew Jackson did with the American Indians so he could run a better Holocaust. Oh, yeah. Very well documented. Very well documented. Andrew Jackson. For what he did to the American Indians. He was a Nazi. Andrew Jackson was a Nazi hero.
South Africa also studied the U.S. government's treatment of Native Americans for their way to set up their apartheid system, too. So, and that's well documented also, if that happens to work in somebody.
Welcome back to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger. I pulled that clip off of YouTube. It was from the University of Kansas State. It was a Dr. Leslie D. Hannon. And what he was talking about, he was showing a $20 bill, and he's showing the picture of Andrew Jackson, and then he basically changed it to Adolf Hitler and said, well, what would the Jewish people think if they had to carry this? Now, before I introduce the next guest, what I'm thinking is what do the Canadian Aboriginal people think they have to carry a bill around with John A. McDonald on it. John A. McDonald was in charge of the federal Canadian government when they set up the residential schools that forcibly assimilated, tortured, killed, and you know, countless Aboriginal children that disappeared. He also set up the Indians Act. And what happens is, with that said, I'd like to now introduce the next guest, being Kevin Annette, the producer of the Unrepentant from the residential schools, and then also has his show right after this. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Rich.
Well, so what is your thoughts as being an activist and being involved with the Aboriginal people here in Canada? How do you feel that they feel having to carry John A. McDonald in their wallets?
I don't know. I don't want to speak for them, but I know how it makes me feel. I think it's totally in line with the history of this country. You know, it's kind of like Canada's gone out of its way to make itself seem to itself liberal and humanitarian, but it's kind of like in any small town when you come across the town pedophile, he's always the most respected and loved guy. You know, the official take on this man is he's really an honorable man. In fact, that's to cover up all of the buggering that's going on. And the same thing happens on a big scale, you know. I often say that, like, the bigger the crime, the bigger the concealment, and the bigger bullshit has to go along to justify it. And that's kind of Canada in a nutshell. Like, we have this one sense of history, and then there's the reality. And I think that that's, you know, certainly in this case of why do we have people who perpetrated genocide on the money? Well, that's because we're openly flaunting the fact that, yes, we did it, and we're getting away with it, and nobody can do anything about it. I mean, that's my take on it.
And also, recently, there was a government-sponsored a list of 100 things that most define Canada. And sadly, the First Nations people were not included in this list. However, once there was enough people online pointing out this tragic mistake, the first people were added as 102nd on 101 list. The article went on to say, and quoting, "The oversight of the late edition reflects how historic marginalization of the First Nations people has pushed them to the fringes of Canadian conscience." What are your thoughts on this, Kevin?
Well, I mean, you know, it's... When I was a kid being raised in the prairies, I remember going out to the Calgary Stampede, and I was really disappointed because my mom said, look over there, there's some Indians. And I saw these guys walking around in cowboy hats, and I said, they're not Indians, they don't have feathers on. And she said, well, you know, that's how they dress now. They used to be Indians, and they're not anymore. And that kind of, you know, in a liberal, nice way, she's basically saying, yeah, they've been wiped out. They don't exist anymore. And it goes back over 500 years. You know, there was this idea called terra nullius. It means, it's Latin, it means the land of no one. And whenever the kings and popes of Europe were talking about the New World, they used that term, terra nullius. Nobody lives there, the land of no one. And so, you know, that enters into our consciousness. And we may think that we recognize Native people, but in our daily practice and the legal system and everything, they don't exist. They might as well not exist, and that's reflected in that list.
And also, since Columbus has come to the Americas, there's been a steady decline in the Native American population in the U.S. It went from a high of 60 million to a little over 800,000 by World War II. With all this in mind, I've heard that anywhere from 150 to around 200 million Native Americans have been killed through exposure to smallpox, TB, and numerous other diseases. What I'd like to ask is, with this soon-to-be-open Holocaust Museum in Winnipeg, which is going to be educating and reminding many of us about past Holocausts through the world, why is it that the Holocaust happening to the First Nations people has not been put on the same platform and taught in the school system like other Holocausts that have risen of the dark of humanity?
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, I think it's because Canada is a resource base for the U.S., and a lot of those resources are on unceded Native land. If we ever really opened the lid on what happened, a lot of companies would lose a lot of money, and they can't let that happen. I have a little story to tell just about the museum in Winnipeg. It was started by the Aspers, who own CanWest. Izzy Asper and his daughter Gail own half the media in Canada. They're the ones who funded this Holocaust Museum in Winnipeg. Now, the original plan was, they've gotten up to, I think the latest figure was $28 million from the federal government to build this thing. Part of the original plan was one quarter to one half of the floor space is reserved for them to talk about the Nazi Holocaust of the Jews. The other half is open to temporary exhibits, but nowhere on that list of temporary exhibits was Aboriginal people mentioned once. And this is in the city with the largest Aboriginal population in Canada, where that was the center of the whole genocidal attack on the Native people in the West. And so what was interesting was the Assembly of First Nations and Phil Fontaine and everybody was going to object to that, and suddenly they didn't. And do you remember a few years ago, a lot of these AFN chiefs were flown over to Israel, and there was a big protest about that because they were asked by various Native people not to do that, since to take part in that would be to condone, you know, implicitly their treatment of the Palestinians, who are in a very similar situation to how Native people are in here, with apartheid laws and that kind of thing. So it apparently Asper went around and bought off all the Native chiefs. According to some sources I have in the FN, they were given as much as $50,000 each not to push for an Aboriginal Holocaust Museum. And what's interesting, it didn't happen just there. There's also one in the Portage La Prairie in Manitoba that they've opened up. Again, totally sanitized version of the residential schools, not a mention of a kid dying, even though the government's already admitted that 50,000 or more kids died in these schools, not a mention in any of these official museums. So it gives you an example of how, you know, Aspers, who are in very big with the Liberal Party, as is Phil Fontaine. I mean, these people, they're all in the, it doesn't matter what color your skin is, they're all in the elite group, and they all need to keep this whole genocide quiet because there's big money and a lot of land and resources at stake.
Wow. Tanya has a quick question to ask you. Tanya Hill, my co-host. Go ahead, Tanya.
Hi, Kevin. I was just wondering your opinion on recently there was that Indigenous, UN Indigenous Declaration that was signed by most countries except for Canada, U.S., Russia, not surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Canada, sorry, did not sign on to this declaration. As well, they've kind of refrained from giving an apology, such as the one given in Australia recently. I don't know if you know anything about that. But what's your opinion on why Canada is not signing on to these declarations and kind of putting a wall up when it comes to recognizing Indigenous rights?
Well, Tanya, I think it has to do with something that I already mentioned, and that is Canada can't afford to officially acknowledge that Indigenous people have the right to their own land, because that's, in fact, what the basis of that whole declaration is with the UN. It says basically Native people have the same rights as anybody else. And genocide in Canada has always rested, and in the U.S., has always rested on the notion that Native people are in a separate category of humanity, including a separate legal category. Like under the Indian Act, you're not a citizen. A Native person on a reserve under the Indian Act is not a citizen of Canada. They're under the wardship of the Indian Affairs Department, like they're a child or somebody who's mentally deficient. They don't have the right to conduct their own affairs. The human rights legislation doesn't apply to Native people. The Indian Act supersedes all those laws. So if they recognize the Native people are the same as anybody else, that would mean the whole kind of structure in Canada would start coming apart, because it rests on that whole separateness, the notion that, you know, it's a very simple example. Any other people, if it was learned that 50,000 of their children had died in a school system, there'd be an outcry. There'd be a major criminal investigation. This Truth and Reconciliation Commission the government is setting up is not allowed to name names. They're not allowed to talk about any wrongdoing in a residential school. I mean, what kind of inquiry is that, where you can't talk about wrongdoing, yet they can get away with it? Because it, again, rests on that notion that Native people really don't, they can be legally disposed of, and it's not a problem. So I think in a nutshell, that's why they don't want to sign on to these conventions.
And also, if you take a look at Norway, Norway has created its natural resources, put it underneath the people, and has therefore leased the rights to, created this trust, which basically leases the rights to different corporations. And one of the corporations is now being, lo and behold, is getting involved with the tar sand in Alberta. Mm. And Alberta is only paying $2 per barrel royalty, which is extremely low. Now, with that question in mind, why hasn't ordinary Canadian people stood up with their voices and demanded, not asked, but demanded, that our natural resources which are supposed to be owned by the crown, which is supposed to be the people, according to a few people. Why aren't we standing up and demanding that our natural resources are put under control of all of us? We enter into a partnership with the First Nations people where we share the profits out of it, and the rest of the money is therefore put into social programs, universal health care, union rights, fair pay, and therefore we're allowed to create a bigger country where more people can come and enjoy what Canada is supposed to be.
I think most people do support. I mean, back in the 60s, I remember a survey the government did, and they found over half of Canadians supported nationalizing all the resource industries to keep under, you know, public ownership. But don't forget, the media is owned by guys like Asper, and they create this constant notion that most Canadians don't support those kinds of things. Don't forget, too, that there's a thing called redwashing going on. The out in the forest industry in BC and all the uranium industry, they hire native people as their public relations. And a best example of that is, do you remember the guy, Gary Morasty, who was a native member of Parliament in Saskatchewan? He blows the whistle last year in Parliament. He gets up and asks the Minister of Indian Affairs to start repatriating the remains of these children who died in the residential schools. Within 3 months, Gary Morasty is offered a job by Camco, which is the largest uranium company in the world. It operates in northern Saskatchewan on native territory, dumping, you know, poisonous uranium tailings and that on native land, making a lot of people sick. They hire Gary Morasty as their public relations guy, right? And that happens all over. And now, you know, people will think, well, we can't really protest the uranium industry now or the lumber industry, since the native people have a cut in it and they have an interest in it. You know, it's a smart move by multinationals to try to legitimate their actions. So that's...
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
The whole thing about how you do it. Now, here, historically, I've studied war. This is the ingredients for war. In the old days, it was steel, blood, and gold made war. Then as we advance, it's steel, blood, chemicals, gunpowder, and oil made war. Mm-hmm. Now, every time you can put these chemicals together, but the pot you put them in, the oven you cook them in, is the people's consent. If the people of the country turned around and said, we don't want this war, the businesses were out and mm-hmm. the governments are out. So this is what they've done. With mass programming on the TV, the shows, a diesel Hummer is a military vehicle. When people see a Hummer walking, going down the street, this is a military vehicle. When people accept military khaki as a fashion, mm-hmm. this is a military mindset they send them. You walk down the street, and what are all the kids wearing? Death heads and skulls, SS. Mm-hmm. It is the military, the corporates, through their media control of controlling fashion, controlling mindset, that have everybody dumbed down.
Right.
And they talk about the junkies on the street out here. Well, the rest of this country is a bunch of money junkies, mm-hmm. one form of junkie or another. And once you have a junkie under your thumb and you're giving him what you want, he doesn't complain. And this is exactly what's going on. The people have to turn. They want to know how to fight these guys. It's what that lady said earlier, boycott. Forget about boycotting the census. Coca-Cola has a $160 million investment in that war. You see those guys over there drinking? They're drinking tons of mm-hmm. Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. I've seen a thing on TV where they, on radio, American radio, where they have warehouses of uniforms. One half of the uniforms are all there. They're being brought in by Nike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these huge corporations. And you're wearing Nike walking mm-hmm. down the street. You're drinking Coca-Cola. Yep. You are part of the machine. You might as well just put on a flak jacket and pick up a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't...
And Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons, profit. The whole bit. This is what it's about. Yeah. I can't emphasize it more. The way it is boycott, boycott, boycott. Mm-hmm. Stop, look at, because it is your children's future that is on the line. Mm-hmm. And if you have stocks in these companies, then you too, blood drips from your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I guess.
Right on.
And also, the final point is that... you take a look at the United States right now. They recently passed an act. It's called the HERO Act, right? Lo and behold, if you take a look at legislation in the United States, it's, you know, what they'll do is they'll wrap it around patriotism. Oh, we have to protect the flag. We have to protect the people. I mean, I am one somebody that I believe that both nations should stay sovereign under their own flags. Yes, I do believe in protecting ordinary people. But what these elitists do... It's with this HERO Act, they said, well, all the soldiers that are going over there to the illegal war, to participate in the illegal actions, you know, we're going to give you this allowance, and we won't tax it anymore in this HERO Act. And then further down, you look further down, and all of a sudden it says that anyone that has over $600,000 and you try to claim that you're no longer a U.S. citizen, or you try to take that money out of the U.S., guess what? You're going to get taxed on it now. So the question is, as you take a look at the banking system now crashing and everything, you know, how long is it going to be before the gold is now, the U.S. government's going to step in and say, well, we're not going to allow you to take the gold out anymore. And that $600,000 a year, we're going to lower it right down to about $5,000 or even $500. They're going to tax everyone. The U.S. government has gone bankrupt. They are, you know, close to $10 trillion in debt. People have to realize that our form of government, our capitalist form of government, has been allowed to tie itself in with the war machine, which has therefore bankrupt us. And what happens is if we don't change it now, this our generation has to change it. If we don't change it, we are going to be paying with the allowing the elitists to gain control, change the money system, and the next thing you know, welcome to the New World Order. And that's what it's all about. And now, with that said, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. It's July 28th. We're going to leave right now with Dan Thompson singing his theme song. And then we're going to hand it over, the reins over to Kevin, who's going to continue on with Hidden from History.
Thanks, Reg.
Okay, we're going to try to get it right this time, you guys. And everybody get it right out there. Remember, you know, if you lay down on the sidewalk, people walk over top of you.
Pack your bags, it's off to war. Won't be hanging around here no more. Time to back a capitalist whore and pay the price for being poor. Pack your bags, it's off to fight for the corporate fascist right. Get a look at liberty from the working ends of an RPG. Don't you worry about the kill and make the ultimate sacrifice. They bought everything we're selling, lock and load, and don't think twice. Hop, two, three, four. Hop, two, three, four. Pack your bags, it's off to war. Too much money to ignore. Unlimited growth, my stars have more. What do you think you're fighting for? Pack your bags, it's off to sea. What the new world order will be. See how manifest destiny. Investing in a killing tree. Cool, it's bombs and sons and daughters. What's the price of human fodder? Down at the old Walmart store. Pack your bags, it's off to war. Pack your bags, the time is right for our military might to put up a valiant fight with no future end in sight. Pack your bags, it's off to hell. Ask God of a tolling bell. Greed's great lust is never sated. Just please don't come home irradiated. Pack your bags, it's off to war. Won't be hanging around here no more. Pay the price of a corporate whore. What do you think you're fighting for? Pack your bags, it's time to see what the new world order will be. See how manifest destiny. Get a look at liberty from the working ends of an RPG.